This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. Did you know that when you signed that agreement for a new smartphone or a credit card, that car loan, so many of the times that you bought something, you were giving up one of your fundamental constitutional rights, the right to sue. So when that smartphone explodes and burns down your house, or when the credit card company has Swiss cheese cybersecurity and allows you to get hacked, or that car was in a flood and the dealer didn't tell you, so you ended up with a lemon, you became the wronged party. So you want your day in court. But you signed that agreement that required mandatory arbitration. That means no judge, no jury, no right to a speedy trial, no appeal. You're out of luck. Forced arbitration is everywhere. It's like a trap. You don't know it until it's too late. But under the new federal financial reform, the Consumer Finance Protection Bureau did get the authority to study this issue. Last month, they had a hearing in Dallas. Shannon Phillips testified, representing the Independent Bankers Association of Texas. He said forced arbitration makes sense because it's good for business.
I will say, when I first started practicing law, there was an attorney, an older attorney, who talked to me. I was getting involved in some mediation, and told me he didn't like mediation because it was taking money out of his pocket. He was not at all concerned with the consumer. He was concerned with the consumers not coming to attorneys and paying them to take these matters to court.
We're talking about forced arbitration. Have you ever been in one? How did it go? I want to hear your story. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 614-8980. You could also email us at thesource@tpr.org. Joining us to talk about this, Sarah E. Smith, Program Director for Texas Public Interest Research Group, and Christine Hines. She's with the Consumer and Civil Justice Council with Public Citizen. Welcome to The Source, both of y'all.
Thank you.
So let me ask you, Christine, forced arbitration, how big of a problem is this, or how big is it?
We think it's a very big deal. The courthouse doors are being closed to consumers who need it, particularly consumers who don't know that they need it at the time. So it's a very huge problem for consumers at this point.
Sarah, with the Texas Public Interest Research Group, they had the hearing in Dallas last month. You were there. What was the hearing for? What happened there?
Yeah, so the CFPB, as you mentioned, has been mandated to study forced arbitration and what impact that has on consumers. And so as part of that study, they're going around and holding these field hearings across the country, hearing from people on what they think. And I was able to attend it. Actually, I didn't get a go to the hearing itself, but I was at the roundtable before. And I think people in the community are really concerned with, how often these arbitration clauses are sort of buried in fine print of a number of consumer contracts.
So what does that mean? Like when I talked about it, you buy a phone, you buy anything now, you're signing these agreements to buy. You're not given a choice. Everything is in there. If you want to buy the car, you got to sign that paperwork. And in there somewhere is what are you agreeing to?
Yeah, you're essentially giving up your opportunity to have your case heard in court in front of a judge, and you're signing a contract that allows the company to sort of choose who the arbiter is, where the arbitration's taking place, and sort of decide the rules of the game. And I think the more interesting thing is, so I'm an attorney, and I read these contracts all the time, and I'm confused about what they mean. But even if I wasn't confused about what they meant, there's nothing I could do about it, because these are boilerplate contracts. It's take it or leave it. And so consumers are really stuck in this situation.
So let me ask you about that, Christine, your lawyer. So can I just scratch that part out and initial it and still be able to buy that refrigerator?
It's you can try. I think it's worth it if a consumer sees an arbitration clause, if they're aware of the seriousness of the arbitration clause and what it means, they can you can try to negotiate it out. It's unlikely in many instances because, as Sarah mentioned, that these are take it or leave it non-negotiable contracts. But I think if you're in a position to negotiate the contract, then most definitely try to get that particular provision removed.
Doesn't that, Christine, kind of violate what a contract is supposed to be? I mean, a contract is an agreement where both sides give up something and you come to an agreement. But if you're not even allowed to negotiate, how is that a contract?
Right. That's what we're facing these days. I mean, non-negotiable take-it-or-leave-it contracts are kind of a part of what we enter into every day when we click on, you know, terms of service for anything online, when we sign any of these documents. Most of them are non-negotiable. They're standard. I mean, our cell phone contracts, we definitely don't negotiate the terms of our cell phone contracts, but we need cell phones, and, you know, Verizon or AT&T they're not going to allow us to change the terms of these contracts. But we need cell phones, and so we sign on to these provisions. So when we need a job, we can't. We sign the employment contract. Sometimes there are employees who can negotiate with the employer, but most of the time those contracts are non-negotiable as well. But you're not going to reject a job because it has an arbitration clause in it. Most people aren't. But if there is a way to negotiate it out to remove them, then definitely consumers or employees should try to do that if they can.
Right. So you mentioned, you know, it's also in employee contracts. It's also in nursing homes. If you want to have a family member go to a nursing home, that's also in the agreement. It seems like there is a trend of these forced arbitration clauses in our lives all over the place, Sarah.
Yeah. So the Supreme Court has made a number of rulings that have sort of been anti-consumer rulings and that have encouraged companies to use these arbitration clauses. And, you know, they've become much more pervasive in employment contracts, in consumer contracts, and all sorts of contracts since then.
But we do have that constitutional right that's supposed to be guaranteed. And why is it so easy to give that up? Shouldn't there be more to it, Sarah?
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's why groups like the Texas Public Interest Research Group and Public Citizen and USPIRG were all hoping that the CFPB, you know, goes through this study phase really quickly and comes out with some strong regulations to protect consumers. Because arbitration in itself is not necessarily a bad thing, but when consumers are forced into arbitration and it's a one-sided deal, you know, then it's really bad for us.
Okay, well, let's talk about that when we come back from the break, because I've heard that these arbitrations, they really are weighed in favor of the corporations, and the track record bears that out, at least that's what I've read. I'll get your input from that when we come back from the break, and we'll take the phone calls as well. If you've ever been in forced arbitration, we want to know how it went for you. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980, talking about mandatory arbitration. It's all around us right now, everywhere. This is The Source on KSTX. We'll be right back.
We've heard a lot this morning about sort of the inputs, but I really think at some point we need to focus a little bit more narrowly on the outputs. Are consumers better served in the final result under class actions, under arbitration, when they go to court? Ultimately, legitimate businesses want the same thing from a dispute resolution system that consumers do, a way to vindicate legitimate grievances that works in the real world, not just in theory, a system in which the money expended is focused on compensating legitimate claims, not on legal fees to either side, and a system that can't be gamed by lawyers, again, on either side. And we think arbitration meets this test. It's quicker, it's cheaper, and more efficient than litigation in court, and therefore provides access to justice for claims that consumers could not pursue in court. Studies have shown that consumers do as well or better in arbitration as compared to court. Again, thinking about the results. Arbitration also reduces transaction costs for businesses, which can help them charge lower prices.
And that was Jess Sharp with the U.S. Chamber of Commerce speaking at a field hearing hosted by the Consumer Protection Bureau in Dallas last month about forced arbitration. That's what we're talking about right now. Our guest, Sarah E. Smith, Program Director for the Texas Public Interest Research Group, and Christine Hines, the Consumer and Civil Justice Counsel with Public Citizen. Mr. Sharp is saying that actually the citizens, they fare pretty well. He says it's just as good as going to a court. So we save a lot of money. Why? So what's wrong with that, Christine?
We have found quite differently. If, as you mentioned before in your introduction, the corporations write the rules for these private arbitrations. There's no transparency. They choose the arbitration provider. They choose, most of the time, they choose the location, and they provide repeat business for arbitration providers, because while the consumer may go to that arbitration once, the companies go many, many times on an individual basis. They may charge it. They provide repeat business to the arbitration providers, therefore giving the arbitration providers incentive to support these companies. So we're highly skeptical, and we found differently in previous reports. We did a report in 2007, looking at there's not very much arbitration data out there, but we looked at California arbitration data at outcomes and found that consumers lost more than 90% of the time against credit card companies with arbitration by a provider called NAF, the National Arbitration Forum, which no longer does consumer arbitrations.
Okay. All right. So I'm going to go to a phone call right now. Jerry has called in. Okay. Jerry, welcome to The Source. Jerry, go ahead.
Thank you. Hello.
Hey there, Jerry. Go ahead.
Something that I was going to mention, I always thought of as arbitration being placed very far away from the person who had a problem. And I always thought the purpose was to make it rather inconvenient for them to actually get there and do what they needed to do.
Okay, Jerry, that's a good question. Thanks for bringing that up. So, Sarah, does that happen? Do they put these arbitration locations arbitrarily at someplace else?
Well, yeah. So in a number of contracts and arbitration clauses, you'll find that it says specifically where the arbitration will take place, and that might be in a different state if you are using some sort of service provider from a different state. And, I mean, the CFPB released some preliminary research in December that found that fewer and fewer customers are filing arbitration cases. And, you know, about 9 out of 10 arbitration cases clauses prevent consumers from filing class actions. And so this is all done in sort of a way to discourage consumers from filing these claims. And, you know, so the location, it could be, you know, really inconvenient. Or it just doesn't make sense if it's a $10 charge on your AT&T bill to file an arbitration if you can't join with the other million people who have also had that $10 charge. It just, for a single consumer, it may not be worth it. And these are designed specifically to make it that way.
Back to the phones. The number is 614-8980, 614-8980. Andrew was called in. Thanks for calling in, Andrew. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Yep. All right. Thanks, David. Yes, all the corporations with the congressmen that they've managed to get into office to advocate for them, it's made it very hard on the consumer to get ahead, where we have fair competition, fair prices for everything, and it's pretty soon we're not going to be the United States of America. We're going to be the United Corporations of America.
So it's anti-democratic, you think? Andrew.
It's eliminating the free market completely.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Andrew. Great call. Appreciate that. So, you know, Andrew brings up the fact that, you know, the court system is one of the checks and balances that we have in our system. And so if we lose that, that is an attack on democracy. Christine?
Yes, I completely agree. I think that the free market needs the civil justice system. It means that a consumer can can help themselves. Consumers can help themselves by going to court when they have a dispute against a company. There's no better way of showing how that the democracy works and that we have a free market, because, you know, disputes arise in free markets, right? So that is the best way, is that we've created the court system to resolve these our disputes, and we should be able to access the just transparent court system whenever we want to.
Okay, another caller. Let's get Ed in on this. Ed, thanks for calling in. Appreciate it. You're on the air.
Yeah. I'm a lawyer, and I was involved in a case in which the contract the consumer signed had an arbitration clause in it. It involved a house that was constructed. Actually, the house was presented by the contractor at the Parade of Homes, sponsored by San Antonio, and the house, within a very short time of the time the man moved into his house, started experiencing all kinds of problems, from the masonry on the outside of the house cracking to the fact that the walls inside the house were not plumb and made to specifications. There were cracks in the walls, et cetera, and even the fact that there was at least one window in the house that was installed backwards. We filed a lawsuit on his behalf, and immediately they fell back on the arbitration bit. And when we got into the bit about arbitration, they said, well, you know, we have a special, and I can't even remember what it was, but there was some sort of construction code or so on and so forth that in order for your client to have a claim of any kind, the house must fall under this category. And the category was that the house had to be ready to fall in and be in other words, condemned. If your house was condemned, then you had a claim. If your house wasn't going to be condemned because it was so poorly constructed that it was going to fall down.
So Ed, did you ever get into a courtroom? Did you ever get a judge and a jury on that?
Well, what happened was the guy that sold this, not my client, but another guy, the contractor's home at the Parade of Homes, he ended up being sued personally on it. And he went to the contractor and said, look, you know, I'm being sued on this. Are you going to hire an attorney to represent me? And the contractor said, no, you're on your own. And at that point, the salesman said, okay, then I'm going to tell everybody that calls me exactly what I know about the way you handle your business. And in other words, I'm going to get the skeletons out of the closet.
Right.
And you're going to have to. And instantly, the contractor bought the house back from my client.
Ed, so, you bring up a great point. Thank you for calling in. I want to work off that. So Ed brings up this part about information, and a big part about forced arbitration is the secrecy that surrounds them, that when you enter into forced arbitration, that you are basically, you can't talk about what goes on. So is that a big attraction for the corporations, Christine?
Yes. You know, that transparency is a huge benefit of the court system.
And right. So if I sue somebody, when I sue somebody, suddenly there are a lot of documents that go into the public record that normally do not.
Exactly. Right. There are a lot of documents in discovery. The parties exchange documents, and there will be something that possibly could show that the company was at fault or maybe not. And so what's happening in arbitration, and all of this information is secret. There are no filings. There's no judge that makes a decision and an opinion, and there's no evidence. There's no paper trail. And so if a company is doing something wrong, an individual goes to arbitration, we don't know, maybe they're doing the company is doing the same thing to other consumers, and they don't know that there was a, you know, previous case. So
right.
So all the precedent is gone. So it's a problem for
yes,
for all of us.
Right. Okay, so let's get another caller in on this. Tova has called in. Tova, thank you for that. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Doing good. Go ahead.
Good. I had a case where I raise money for a charity event by selling tickets, and I used this company from California to sell the tickets, and they were really helpful until they were supposed to then give the money over to me after the event was over, and I couldn't. No one would call me back. No one would answer emails. Nothing. I couldn't get my money. It was all money for a charity, and so. I have a friend who's a lawyer, and he says, well, look at the contract. I printed it out. He goes, well, there's this arbitration clause. We'll have to go out to San Francisco. You know, he says, but I'm not going to worry about that. I'm just going to sue him straight out. And he did that, and their lawyer calls back and says, we have to go to arbitration. And my friend attorney says, well, if we do, we do have an office out there. It's a big-time law firm. He said, and we'll take this all the way. You have no excuse for not giving her money, and they sent me a check.
All right, so I'm glad you came out on top. You had a lawyer who was really willing to go to the mat for you. Good story for that. So, Sarah, you know, this thing about lawyers saying, I'm just going to sue you, can a judge say, just toss it out, or can, are judges coming around and thinking, you know, this forced arbitration is for the birds, let's go into the courtroom?
Yeah, so these judges actually have to throw the cases out. The Supreme Court has even held that sort of gateway questions. So whether a contract is void, those are the sorts of questions that if you sign an arbitration clause, you have to arbitrate those. And so, you know, it can be really challenging to even get into the courthouse.
So we've seen some activity in Washington, D.C. Senator Al Franken has tried to pass bills that would limit forced arbitration. Is that getting any traction, Christine?
Well, we have the Arbitration Fairness Act, which would restore our right to go to court. It would not eliminate arbitration or end arbitration. It would just say you can choose how to resolve the dispute after the dispute arises. So these clauses would no longer be in consumer and employment contracts. That bill is Senator Franken, as you mentioned, sponsored the bill, and that bill, we had a hearing in December. The Senate Judiciary Committee had a hearing, and what we hope that the bill will move forward. It is a tough environment for the bill to pass in this Congress, but we are advocating for that bill, strongly advocate and support that bill.
All right. Thank you for that update, Christine Hines, Consumer and Civil Justice Counsel with Public Citizen. We also had Sarah E. Smith on, Program Director for Texas Public Interest Research Group. Thank you both for being here. This is The Source on KSTX. When we come back, we're talking about the NSA. Stay tuned.